Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Cheers, Barney.
Yeah, mate.
I'll cheers you up with my Corona and your coffee.
Oh, yeah.
Cheers. There we go. Yeah. Great to meet you, man.
Yeah. We have met before, actually, I'm sure, because I recognise you.
Yeah, I have. Yeah. We had a brief chat at the Hard Rock Hell up in North Wales.
Oh, God.
When you guys destroyed that.
Yeah.
It was one of my favourite shows of the day.
Yeah. the holiday camp thing.
Yeah, like proper Butlins vibe.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that was the first time we did it, I think, and we were all a bit like, what?
It was great because usually it's kind of like just metal, more middle of the road rock bands, and then you guys came on just decimated.
Yeah, I remember that. You know, that similarly, one of the best gigs that we've ever done, we did that the Rave Festival in Liverpool. It was
not Global Gathering, but something
I forget the name of it. It's a rave festival up in terrible. Honestly, I'm so bad with
there's been a lot of shows. And but you just, went over well,
it's
right?
Mate, I'll tell you what, it was one of the best we've ever, I mean, it was glow sticks and everything.
Yeah.
And the people just loved it because I think, you know, people can argue backwards and forwards about the music connection, but the point is that spirit of independence is in that scene as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So therefore, we connect. And I've always been of the mindset that, you know, all this stuff about, oh, you shouldn't play with this band or that band. You know, mate, I'll play with a pop band. I don't care. You know, if it's opening people's eyes to either what we're doing or what another band's doing with us on the bill that's quirky and different, then who cares? You know what I mean? Are you really going to be so conservative to stitch yourself up, you know, that you're not going to at least open your ears to other things? You know, I used to be like that when I was 13, 14 years old.
And it's something that you should grow out of once that teenage fascination with the tribe dissipates.
Yeah. See, right? One thing for me in life in general is stereotypes. I hate being stereotyped, and I hate buying into stereotypes. You know, so because I just think it's so constraining. You know, and stereotypes is half the reason why. Not that it's particularly new, but it's half the reason why people are so. People in general are so separatist and isolationist and stuff like that is because of like stereotyping. So whether it's musical or
politics or
culture,
even just
cultural in inverted commas, you know,
it's us versus them, isn't it?
And it's got to stop, you know, otherwise there's quite a serious point to it, you know, in that we'll destroy ourselves from the inside out, you know. So
well, like, without being too doom and gloom at the start, I do feel like that's already definitely happening. I feel like there's a lot, particularly with social media engagement, I feel like that's intensified it a lot, is this whole idea of you think that way, therefore you're different to me.
Yeah, we can stop it, though. We can stop it, that's the point. And another thing is, and this is where I'm going to contradict myself, and I think there's no problem with contradicting
all
yourself.
The most
it's
interesting
a natural
people
thing,
should.
You know? And I think that we should be very careful about getting into the mindset of, you know, with social media. I personally don't do it, only because I ain't got the time to do it. You know, but if I had to step into it, I'd just take whatever comes my way. But I'm not the same as everybody, of course. I just don't do it because I ain't got the time to do it. But I think we do need arenas that are free and unfucked with, basically, you know. And I think that should be one of them, you know. Okay, there's some fairly heinous stuff on there, you know, but there does come a point where I kind of say to myself, as much as this stuff is absolutely despicable, we kind of got to let it roll a little bit, you know, because if you shut down...
Well, that's censorship then, isn't it?
Yeah, and I've always been anti-censorship, you know.
I'm 100% with you on that.
Yeah.
How important is it for you to be friends with people with different political, philosophical, spiritual opinions?
Well, I am naturally, because I just look at it as, why would I want to... Again, goes back to the same thing. Why would I want to channel myself down one very narrow channel? What's the point of that? You know, I can't. There are certain hopes that I have for the world in general. I think everybody does. You know, they want to see the world through their eyes. You know, that. You know, but given that, I think that if you want to live in a very tiny bubble with a couple of other people who want to live in that bubble, then that's, I would suggest that you're not going to live very much of a life.
No.
You know what I mean?
And a lot of people do that now. I think if they find someone in their friendship circle is of a different opinion on something that they feel strongly about, they'll just cut them out. Like,
yeah.
I know a lot of people who are like, right, you voted Brexit, we're not friends anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why not talk to them about why they did?
Yeah.
And then you can have a dialogue.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm only human. I'm only the same. I get very agitated at points with certain things, you know, because the one thing to say is that there are lessons from history that we should learn. You know, it's like, honest, I mean, people might say this is a bit alarmist, but I can see it, you know, because I've been there. If you travel throughout Europe right now, there are things happening that 15 years ago would have been completely taboo. You know, there is an upsurge in certain parts of Europe of militant conservatism.
The rise, you know, of the right.
I mean, we can talk in like those kind of buzzwords and stuff, but it's militant conservatism. That's what it is. And what this is doing is demonising people that are. Look a certain way, obviously skin colour, the usual stuff, but also, you know, gay people, or what people perceive to be gay people, even though they might not even know, you know. And there's all these different people, and it is happening, you know. And in some cases, this is with the backing of the government. This isn't just like vigilante
extremists
groups.
On the street.
These
yeah.
are people who are legitimised by the government, you know. And we know what happened in the 1930s. So these people are very clever. What they'll do, first of all, they'll go to small gatherings like beer halls, like Hitler, where everybody's like pissed. Mm-hmm. And they go, oh, yeah, it's like rowdy. Yeah, that sounds fantastic, you know. And people take it on board, you know. And so it slowly spreads.
Yep.
And then you get... these people feel they have enough power to get representation on local councils, and so then they're able to convince a lot more people. Look, you should like not let these people be comfortable in their existence because of such and such and such and such. And that's how it happens, you know. And this is a very real possibility right now, I would suggest, you know. So we. You know, I'm quite torn, really, you know, between the absolute need to let people express themselves. But it's then you ask yourself, what's the point where I say, if fascism was to rise to the same levels in Europe again, I'm faced with a choice as a humanitarian, or however you want to slice it, person from the left to a point, you know, then I've got to make a choice. Do I have to pick a side, you know? And the problem with picking a side, it leads you down into conflict.
Yeah,
you know. And I do class myself as a pacifist, you know.
You would,
many,
would
yes,
yeah.
yes, yes. But I think I would be challenged. No pacifist is infallible, you know. So then you would have to say, well, what do I do? is it more important that I liberate life from the people that would drag it down to the depths of complete inhumanity, as inhumane as it could possibly be imagined, you know? And that's a struggle, you know?
What always fascinates me, from maybe even like a more curiosity point of view, is what drives people like Hitler in the first place to instigate and stimulate so much hate and divide. It comes from a deep place of unhappiness in themselves.
Yeah, well,
right?
I think there's a long chain of events. You know, the thing is that corruption is where it starts, because obviously society as it is based on economics, whether we like it or not. I would rather, honestly, I have a certain...
Bring back the bartering system.
I'm just going to put it simply here. You know, I come from the crass school of thinking, mm-hmm. you know. Not that they were the
I had
the,
Penny on the show.
Yeah,
lovely, lovely man.
Yeah,
lovely man.
Not from the sort of... not that they invented it, you know, it came centuries before. But, you know, the whole idea of everything collapsing down and starting again with bartering, with citizens' councils, if you want to call it that. I know that's a rough expression, you know, but citizens' councils, true representation, you know, people's representation, you know. I do favour that. But we're stuck with what we got right now.
We are stuck with it, I think. And
it's not going anywhere.
Capitalism is the new religion, really, isn't it? Would you say that that's...
I wouldn't even call it
the world we're in now?
Yeah, well, it is. It is,
like, money
really
does seem to be the new deity that everybody worships.
Well,
and
you can put whatever colour you want on a political system in any country. Yes, it's all based upon market economy, you know, all of it.
Yeah.
Even North Korea's a market economy. Well, it's actually state capitalism, technically, if we want to get into political science, you know, because there's a few people at the top that own all the wealth.
Yeah.
And it trickles down in drops to everybody else. That's the Soviet Union was the same thing, in my opinion. You know what I mean? It wasn't even communism. It was state capitalism. Through few people at the top, extremely wealthy, and like then massive gaps underneath. You know, down to the peasants at the bottom who are really not a good time.
No.
You know.
Have you spent much time in Russia? Have you toured
there
a lot?
I have done. Yeah.
Fascinating country,
times.
Right? I've never been, but I studied Russian history at college, and it's. I mean, it must be ungovernable. Purely and simply because of the size
of
the place.
Yeah.
And have you gotten out of the cities much and seen?
I have. Yeah. Well, we've been
Napalm towns and
Napalm was one of the first to go there. We went there while it was the last week of the Soviet Union. The last week when all the satellite states were collapsing. 1991, we went there. You know, we
what
were
was
one
that
of the
like?
First. Well, here's the thing. Moscow Peace Festival, which was the corporate thing, you know, with Metallica and Motley Crue and whatever. We were the first band to go there independently. We went completely independently. It was a funny old thing because we were followed, you know, by the KGB and stuff. They were, you know, you could see, you know, they were pointed out to us, you know, and so it was, yeah, it was a really funny old thing, but. We encountered, there were some cultural differences, like, fucking, there were so many soldiers turned up to the gig, and we were like, you know, this is a bit uncomfortable.
Is this a bad thing?
Yeah. And they were like, those old sticks came out. And I said to the promoter, to tell the local guy, I said, look, you know, that cannot have this. You cannot have people being beaten with sticks, you know, because they're daring to enjoy themselves, you know. It can't happen. So the soldiers fucking put their batons down and didn't mess. Yeah, you know, so that, I'd say that was quite a small victory in itself, you know. But yeah, it was a funny old thing. There were several bizarre things that happened there. Like, there was one quite tragic thing in that this kid came into the dressing room with a demo cassette of his band. And like, it, we were, bearing in mind at this point, this was one thing that would get us going, you know. We were very kind of, pent up about this, you know. He bought it, it was called Hitler, you know, and he had these swastikas all over it, and the guy's like, here's my band, you know, this is what I'm about, and he gave it to Shane. The bass player was like, and Shane chased him, you know, out of the room, and Shane just stopped at the door, you know, and came back, and we were all like, what the fuck, you know. Well, as it turned out, this kid, the security had clocked him, they'd chased him, and he jumped over a stairwell, I think, and he hadn't made it, and he fell down in this stairwell, and he died, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. So it was a fucking funny old thing, you know. But yeah, it was funny because at the time there was no sort of corporate presence or international presence in terms of business there, if you like. So there was two restaurants, Pizza Hut and McDonald's, neither of which really particularly appealed to me. So you could either pay in rubles or pay in dollars. In the end, I ended up going to Pizza Hut, you know, just because there was no other option. And I was like, you can pay in dollars and be through in like 2 minutes. I said, no, I'm not going to do it, you know. If I'm going to do anything to show my level of support for people, then I'm going to stand in the rubles queue, you know, with everybody else. Fucking 3 hours later.
3 hours.
Yeah, it was a longer way, but I didn't care. You know, I didn't want to do that because I thought that was disrespectful, to be honest, to just flounce in there and start paying with.
Well, that's one way to alienate yourself from the populace.
Yeah, and I don't want to do it. I don't want to elevate myself like that above people. That's just not my way. You know what I mean? So, it was interesting times, you know.
What do you think about moral judgment, Barney, and this idea of people, you know, morally judging people that they perceive to be inferior to themselves for whatever reason, something they've said, something they've done? Because that's quite a grey area for me at the moment as well, and there's a lot of that.
I'm not, whilst people might call me a moral person, but I don't believe in morality because to me, as I understand it, morality was kind of an archaic religious invention, you know. So it assumes that there is one right or a few rights and everything else is wrong. That cannot be the case. How can that be the case?
You know? Who gets to say and decide?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, exactly. So it's quite a difficult thing, you know, because obviously you still have to live life and sort of decipher things as they come along, really. So you kind of have to make your own choices
on a case by case basis.
Yeah, you do, you know, and which again is a real dilemma sometimes. Because I'll be honest, I want a world where everybody lives in peace. And I know that might be a really obvious thing to say, and I know it's been said a lot of times, but that's all I want. I don't want people to fight anymore. You know, I don't want a world where it's some people have more inalienable rights than others. I just don't accept it. I personally don't accept it. You know what, here's the thing. I don't think you should even have to have a passport. I don't think anybody that lives in this world has more right to tell you where you can and can't go than you. You know what I mean? Why should I have to give a passport when I go across the border? It's the world I live in. I want to go where I want to go. And I don't want somebody telling me, you know, oh, you can't go here. You haven't got this particular piece of paperwork that legitimises you to come in here. And I'm, fuck off, like, you know what I mean?
Do you want to hear a funny story?
Yeah.
My good friend, Whitfield Crane, who's in the band Ugly Kid Joe, he, in the 90s, this is obviously before 9/11, he was on tour with Ozzy Osbourne and he lost his passport and he had to get from London to New York. And he managed to blag his way onto the plane with just a tour laminate with his and Ozzy's face on.
Wow.
And he made it there.
Yeah, I am surprised. But well, maybe not back then, but now it wouldn't happen.
Not in a million
but,
years.
But, you know, the thing is that, you know, we're here talking about this, and of course that's not the reality right now. And I get that. I know what people are going to say straight away if they hear that. You know, they're going to say that straight away. They're going to say straight away, well, you know, but it's like, I get that, you know, that's not the reality that we live in.
It's a lot of self-imposed fear, though, isn't it? Like, beware of the terrorists. Everybody needs these, like, identity cards and issues like this.
And
you know?
I think it's hugely unfair.
We might need to move in a minute, but we'll continue. Yeah. Are you all right for now?
Mate, I'm as good as we go. I'm quite enjoying this. I know your equipment's up here. I think it's an absolute travesty, you know, that imperialistic kind of ways have done things in the world, and just because they were done 100 years ago or whatever, that's kind of swept under the carpet now. But the people who are still suffering from those actions now, and the Middle East is a good example, they are. That's still to do. You know, why is it that now, when the tables are turned, they can't come here? You know, why is it that we went there and stomped up? I say we, you know, I'm talking about obviously the empire and various
the
other empires, you know. Why is it that they're not then allowed to come back and maybe take a bit of shelter, you know, from the situation
with
that
the
they find
of a
themselves
life,
in?
Yeah.
Why not? You know, this fear and paranoia of the other, you know, is something that I can't sanction as a human being. I just can't. I'm not gonna. You know, I can't make excuses for it. You know.
Do you feel like we've come a long way in some ways, though? Because the other is obviously a word which is so old and applies to, you know, can go back to times of slavery and fear of even witches, things like that. It's like, yeah, you're a threat to,
yeah,
the status quo.
Yeah.
And it does seem like in many ways it's better to be, say, a transgender person or, a, you know, someone of an ethnic kind of different skin tone to,
yeah, by degrees,
to the white. It's better in many ways
by
today,
degrees,
right?
Yeah, but I think right at the heart of it, it still hasn't changed that much. You know, there's a lot of token gestures sometimes. It doesn't,
yeah,
really, if you really want to be honest with yourself, it hasn't completely changed. It needs to completely change. To the whole human psyche and mindset needs to change, you know, in many respects, you know, because just it's the competitive nature of the human being which I find a negative thing a lot of times,
yeah
has led us to this point, you know, where.
Well, you came of age in the 80s where I feel like from the documentaries that I've watched and the things that I've read, that was the decade when a lot of it changed, right?
Yeah.
When money really got into politics and,
yeah,
money became the defining factor in,
yeah,
how people live their life and conduct themselves.
Yeah.
Would you say that was a,
yeah,
thing that you witnessed living,
yeah,
through it?
I would say so. I mean, I lived in... do you want to move, actually?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, yeah.
Quite a bit. So does that muck up your...
No, it's all good. I'll keep all this kind of stuff in anyway.
I'll move over.
We'll go underneath this umbrella here. There we go.
Yeah.
Typical English weather.
Yeah, right. No, it's actually, it'll be really good for the soil, this year. Nice and verdant. This is stuff as well. Right, where were we?
There we go, bud. The 1980s.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I lived through the whole sort of yuppie thing.
Yes.
Which I was never... I have to say, I'll be completely honest about this. I was never swayed by it. I always thought it was a great big sham. You know what I mean? Plus, my dad was a trade unionist, so he always had his perspective on that stuff, which rubbed off on me. Although I took my own opinions, actually, in the end, you know, which just happened to kind of run in parallel, you know. I always thought greed was good. That was the thing. No, I thought, no, it's not, actually. You know, it's really not. You can see the effects and the consequences around you, you know. We went through things such as, you know, Thatcher's cuts on local services and stuff like that. We lived through all that, you know. When I was a kid, before I was vegan, you know, the school milk, all that stuff, you know, Maggie Thatcher milk snatcher, all that stuff was happening, you know. So,
did you grow up vegetarian?
I'm 14 years old when I
14.
Started. Yeah.
Was that passed on through your parents? Was that something you found for yourself?
No, what it was, you know, my high school, Dartmouth, which is where I went to in Great Bar, was a very, very, it was a huge school, big catchment area, like 1,800 kids, you know. So I saw a video of an abattoir at school, and I was just like, I don't want any part of this anymore. No way. You know, this is just, I can't do this, you know. So it took me a while to get around to it, yeah, but I started sort of being vegetarian, and then progressively in stages, stopped using like animal products at all and stopped wearing leather and stuff like that. Yeah, so it was a gradual thing for me.
Was the punk scene back then a big part of that education for people of your age, would you say, as well? I spoke to Johnny about it a bit, and he said that, you know, bands like Doom, and there was a lot of bands that would be talking about these issues and highlighting them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it wasn't common practice, was it, vegetarianism in the sort of 70s, 80s, even 90s, really.
I mean, although the UK is kind of known as the home of vegetarianism, really.
Is it?
Well, it is in terms of the kind of it becoming aware to the wider populace, you know. But of course, it's been certain religions have used it for centuries, you know. But yeah, on a more public level, I think, you know, the UK really was where it started. So yeah, it was amongst my friends generally, not everybody of course, but yeah, it was, vegetarianism was a big thing, you know, definitely. And again, I wouldn't even call it politics, I'd just call it like just natural thought, you know, human thinking, but you know, the sort of ideas that were around at the time, equality, you know, social justice, you know, economic justice, you know, all that stuff was all definitely important to me. Yeah, it was. I'd kind of already formed my ideas, they were just nuanced. I just needed nuancing in a couple of areas, you know, needing is the wrong way to put it, but they would move that way naturally, you know. So yeah, but it was a big, but then again, you know, going to school, you know, the academia was, I know it's always, actually for the, one of the things with the punk movement was, oh, school and that, this is bollocks, just teaching you. You know what, I actually really enjoyed academic education.
I loved school.
Yeah, you know what, I could have, I was into it, but I could have been into it more. If you see, I did, like most kids, I did piss about, you know, a little bit, but, you know, that sort of physics, biology, chemistry, great, fantastic, you know what I mean? The natural ways of the world was just great, you know, and, yeah, I didn't pursue those paths afterwards, but...
What did you do straight out of school? Did you fall straight into music or
well,
what?
Well, being Birmingham, I went into the car industry.
Of course.
Working in engineering, you know, with as my brothers did, you know. One brother still does. He works BMW, you know, over in Hams Hall, you know. My other brother worked at Land Rover.
Yeah.
I worked at a supply company in Sutton Coldfield, supplying Jaguar and Land Rover in the tool room, so I was engineering, like, yeah, and it was good while it lasted, you know.
Were you happy in that trade, or were you feeling a sense of flight taking over?
I was happy. I liked the job. I just didn't like the way the job, in some respects, I didn't like the way the job was treated. In other words, by the employers, you know, I think just treated a bit like,
you're a number,
fodder, you know what I mean, a little bit. And I need to enjoy the things I do. I need to be stimulated by them, you know, whatever I do in life, you know. And I was stimulated by my job. I liked it, you know. But I just don't think, as in, unfortunately, in a lot of employment, I don't think the management took the employees that were doing these things as seriously as they should have done, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So and yeah, but anyway, my job now is pretty much redundant, I think, you know, with the automation, you know, even if I went back to it, it would be
non-existent.
Very hard, yeah, very hard to get back into. And what basically happened was, I was around during the scum period, you know, the napalm. I was there what has been recorded. I wasn't in the studio, but I'd be in the pub when the guys would come from the studio and they'd come to the pub. And obviously that was 86, 87. But then in 88, 89, when Liam Bill left, and I was friends with Shane, and I was friends with all of them actually, but mainly Shane and Mickey. And they knew what I could do because I already had other bands, you know. So they asked me. And within 3 weeks, I'd left my job. And I was on a plane to CBGB's in New York to play a hardcore matinee show with Prong.
Oh, wow.
And Blind Idiot God.
I had Tommy on this show. I love him, Tommy Victor. Because he used to do the sound there as well, didn't he?
Yeah, mate, the first Prong act. We were playing them on that on Primitive Origins, which to me, sorry, Tommy, but still unsurpassed. You know, and yeah, it was, mate, you can imagine what that was like for a 19-year-old kid, like, you know what I mean?
Well, that's the mecca, isn't it? I mean, that venue,
yeah,
and that scene,
yeah,
was just where it was at,
yeah,
at that point in time.
I remember one, it's just a small but funny memory, you know. I remember, like, there was me, obviously me, Shane, Jesse, Mickey, don't think Mitch was with us at that point. I can't even remember. I know it sounds really bad. Sorry, Mitch. But and we just stepped off the plane, and we got to CBGB's, and we were absolutely flummoxed because we were so hungry, and we couldn't find anything to eat. So we were like eating bags of crisps, you know. And so in the front of CBGB's, like a 5-lane road, you know, and we were like scratching our heads going, how the fuck do we cross this thing? Like, you know, it was just that kind of typical,
yeah.
You know,
Brits abroad for the first time.
Yeah, we were like, yeah, what's all this about? Like, you know.
So was that your first time in America as well?
Yeah, it was, yeah. We did, if I remember, we did the first Grind Crusher tour in the UK, which was my first gigs with the band. And then we did New York with Prong, Blind Idiot God. We did a couple of other gigs as well, which have been arranged by friends, you know, around and about. So yeah, those are my earliest times with Napalm, you know.
Who have you spent time with a lot over the years on the road from the States, perhaps, that you formed friendships with? Because I know that your band is a band that transcends genres, and it's been a band of influence and inspiration to so many. And I know that's not probably something which you...
Yeah, I mean, well, we're actually
focus on
one of the bands who are about to go out on the road. We're sick of it all in the States.
Yeah,
yeah,
we had Lou on here as well. Love Lou.
Yeah, yeah. So
wonderful, man.
So we clicked in a way that a lot of bands don't, you know, because slightly different area of the scene, but the hardcore scene. But you know, here's the thing. To me, sometimes one of the things I dislike about that point is that it was kind of separatist. For some people, oh, if you like European hardcore, you can't like this US stuff on the East Coast. It's not raw enough and all the rest of it. And I was like, and Shane will tell you the same thing. But you know, we like a bit of everything, man. You know what I mean? We really do. You know, why should we just like one thing and not another? You know, it's like, and why should we only like something because it has a particular mindset? You know, because they think like crass. Well, no. You know, going back to what we were saying earlier on. Not everybody's got the same opinions, you know. Admittedly, a lot of those bands in the kind of in a certain ballpark, but there was different strains of thought going off that. So, like, no, you know, we like this stuff, you know. Why? We're not going to be afraid about admitting it, you know. So, yeah, anyway, sorry, digressing. But
that's what podcasts are
for, yeah. Sick of it all, guys. We just clicked instantly. We became, like, really good friends. And this was 91, you know, so we're going back. With them at the end of this year, you know, us, them, Municipal Waste, I think. So.
Nice.
Yeah, so that tour is going to go out in the States.
What about unlikely bills? Have you ever found yourself on any unlikely bills?
Yeah, mate, we've done a rave. We've done the rave. Just talk about this. I'm glad I spoke about it, otherwise I would have forgotten. So basically we did our sort of two-yearly Japanese tour. And we were going to South Korea, you know, afterwards. And so the promoter was an absolute stroke of genius, to be fair. So we did one gig in like a small club there. Usual thing, you know, great, you know. And then the promoter booked us on this festival. And we were like, we didn't have any details about it. We're like, what is this thing, you know? It turned out it was a K-pop festival.
Amazing.
It was all K-pop bands.
Yeah, yeah.
And we thought, we were like, what the fuck? You know, which contradicts what I was saying earlier, but then when we did the gig, it was all school kids, 14, 15-year-old boys and girls, you know, and they went fucking apeshit, man, you know, when we played. And all these K-pop stars coming up to us and going, oh, I've never seen anything like that. It was incredible, like, you know what I mean? And we were just like, really? And they were like, yeah, that was just mind-blowing, you know. It was a stroke of genius, really, as it turned out. But so that was probably, you could argue, one of the most unlikely bills ever, you know. And then there's other things like we've been direct support to Faith No More, for example, a few times. Now, people might think, eh? You know what I mean? But look at them. Okay, they're nowhere near as extreme as what we are, but they are also a very intricate musical mix, a stew of many different things, you know. So... we played with them at their peak on the real thing, you know.
Really?
Yeah, we did a gig with them in Holland, it was, you know, in this fucking arena, you know. Again, lots of young kids. And it was great. You know, okay, there was some of the audience that were fucking baffled. That were going, you know.
This is not We Care
yeah,
A Lot.
Yeah. But it went in the end, you know. Why not challenge yourself? You know, there's no sense in preaching to the converted, be that musically or be that, you know, in terms of your ethos. There's no point just playing to the same people all the time. Yeah, of course. That's what I say. You shouldn't play to. I'm not saying that at all.
It's good to go out your comfort zone, isn't it? Challenge yourself.
And surely with a band like Napalm, you could argue that the music is confrontational, you know, the sound of it. The ethos is putting ideas out, not to just the music community, but it has a far bigger reach in theory. So then, if logic follows that, why would you not get out there to people who wouldn't... by choice, come and see you for your playing on your own. Of course you fucking should, like, you know what I mean? And anybody who wants to tell me otherwise, that's fine, that's their opinion. But I'm at the point where I'm sort of, you know, open to anything, you know, really, you know.
Are you a married man, Barney?
No, not married, no.
So you never wanted to do the settle down, have a family thing?
Well, I certainly don't want a family in terms of kids. No. I've always pledged and I've always said that I do not want children. And, of course, people say to you, oh, you will one day, you know, just wait, something like... Mate, I don't. For a couple of reasons. First of all, I want to make the most of my life that I can. This is the one selfish part of me. And... when I say I don't mind saying it's selfish because it's not a malicious thing. It's just...
It's not harming anyone else.
No. I want to live my life. I want to be able to up sticks and go when I wish to, you know. That might be with another person, you know, a partner or whatever. But in terms of children, I don't want children, you know. There's another point here. I don't particularly feel motivated to bring kids into this world right now, you know, because... I feel that the youth, I think it's criminal the way the youth are treated. You know, they are scapegoats for like so many different things, and I don't think it's right. You know, there's still this mentality that exists. Oh, if you're of a certain age, you know, then you have more kudos than or more integrity and more knowledge than a kid that's 15 years old. Bollocks, quite frankly, you know, simply not true, you know. You underestimate kids at your peril, you know what I mean?
Well, so often you form, as you've just said and proved, you form a lot of your ideological makeup at that key teenage period.
Yeah.
And a lot of those ideas that you decide upon then often stay with you for the rest of your life, right? They grow and evolve.
Yeah.
But very often you do kind of set your flag up when you're a kid and go, this is kind of where I stand.
Yeah. I mean, there's prejudice is prejudice, you know. There's a lot of prejudice against young kids, you know. However you want to term them, the youth, young people, whatever.
Juvenile delinquents.
Yeah, whatever phrase you want to use. I think it's crap. You know, I hear people spouting off about young kids sometimes. It's bollocks, you know what I mean? You know, it's to give them a bit of credit and maybe you'll get the respect back, you know what I mean? That's definitely a thing for me, you know.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com.
Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
How important is travel to you? And where are some of your favourite places?
Yeah, I mean,
to spend time. For me, it's the kind of the currency of my life. It has afforded me all of my best experiences
and
taught me so many lessons that staying at home would have never imparted. And I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I like to think, I hope that my mind would still be open, you know, and I would still not accept what I'm spoon-fed, you know what I mean? But yeah, travel has definitely been a great thing for me. I've experienced, you know, but it's quite interesting that there's this debate, with the debate about Europe going on right now. People tend to see on the I'm getting to cliches now, but people on the Remain or the Brexit side look at Europe as a single entity. Not everybody, you know, but there is a fair percentage of people that do that. It's not a single entity. You can have 1,000 different experiences in Europe, you know what I mean? You know, all of which will be different to your everyday effortless stroll through on any given day. You know, it's like there are 1,000 different experiences to have. So yeah, definitely travel has opened up our eyes, you know, for sure. But the thing is that even with that, it wouldn't make me treat people any differently place to place. I always get asked a question. Oh, you know, you'll get to a country, a kid with it'll turn up with a fanzine, you know, with a recorder, like, you know, much like yourself. Oh, let's talk about the fans in this country, you know, what are you going to give special? And I'm like, mate, I'll just say the same as I do everywhere else. It's not because I'm being a robot and I've got nothing else to say.
It's just you get what you get, which is me.
People are people, yeah. You know, they really are. And in fact, and this is... This is also kind of a train of thought in that sort of free thinking, the crass movement kind of thing. Like, culture sometimes can actually be a real negative, you know, because sometimes what culture does is it sets precedence for things that really are.
You mean like personality traits and customs and things like that?
Yeah, customs, you know, things that are. On a first level, as a human being, are not acceptable, you know, in terms of perception and treatment of other human beings. Yet, because they become a cultural norm, you know, you should respect it. Bollocks, you know. If something is detrimental to other human beings and to the coming together of people, I think I don't give a shit what it is. You know what I mean? Bullfighting, if you want to use an extreme example, you're told, yeah, you've got to respect it because it's called. No, bollocks. You know, you have, as a human being, you have the level of perception to know that treatment of a sentient being is not fucking acceptable. You know what I mean? So don't give me that, like, you know what I mean? Seriously, you know.
Let's talk about spirituality. Is there any side to your character which believes in?
Absolutely.
Energy.
See, I'll give you a quick. Yeah, no.
From absolutely. The great beyond?
Nope, no, absolutely not. You know, I think everything can be put down to. We're talking about school, science lessons. Everything can be put down to chemical and electrical impulses within the body, you know. I had a conversation with a friend of mine the other day who lives elsewhere in the world, which is. And they were saying to me, "Are you still not spiritual yet?" You know, which I thought was
like
a really
expecting
funny question.
A conversion at some point.
I was like, "No," because we got into talking about ghosts. I said, "No," because you got to remember is that the human brain, we still do not know enough about the human brain. You know, what it is and how it functions. We don't. The heart, another essential organ, we know plenty about. But the human brain, we still know a fraction of what the possibilities are with the human brain. And so therefore, you have to understand that the human brain can make people think and do some very strange things, you know, sometimes. And I think the apparitions and ghostly appearances is down to trauma, mindset, anxiety, you know, or even on a good side of the spectrum. Positive vibes can also give you illusions and apparitions. So I think there's an explanation for everything. I believe that we are electrochemical matter. You know, we exist in a world that is governed by physical forces, chemical and biological again, and the interaction of all that stuff does some weird and wonderful things sometimes. Look at the Northern Lights, you know, yeah, over man. The top of the...
Have you been to Iceland a lot?
I've been to Iceland. I've never seen the Northern Lights up close.
It's a beautiful country, isn't it?
Yeah, we were just there. We just did a gig there, actually, 2-3 weeks ago, you know. But, so there are things to, you know, there are explanations for these things, you know. And I truly believe that. I don't believe in anything from beyond the grave, you know. I just don't see the evidence for it, you know. I just don't see the scientific evidence for it. Big science person, you know. I don't see the evidence for it, you know.
Where do you stand on psychedelics and hallucinogenic drugs?
Have you
done much in your time?
I've tried a couple of things, but then don't do me any good. Don't suit me. No, my it must be my chemical composition.
Right.
It just doesn't. So you had some bad trips.
Have you?
Yeah. Well, I tried. Even weed does not suit me at all.
I call weed parajuana.
Yeah.
Because it gives me extreme paranoia, even like a couple of drags.
For me and you, but it's important to say as well. It's important to say that it's an incredibly important tool, you know, in the treatment of ailments and disease.
Yeah, from cancer to depression.
The fact that it's still illegal makes me absolutely just wonder what the fucking minds are of the people, you know. The fact that it's still legal, something that comes from the ground like that, you know, that will grow whichever way you slice it, you know, it will grow, you know. So I just don't understand, you know, why it's still so people, that certain parts of the world are so dismissive of it, you know. And
well, it's that age-old propaganda, isn't it, that it's a gateway drug. That's always the thing that the government has fallen on. Like,
well, I watched the Tory leadership thing, which was a ball of fun and games, you know what I mean, on the telly the other night, and that they came up in that debate because there's this, I hate to bring like sort of tabloid stuff into this conversation, but it's like, because, you know, Michael Gove, one of the candidates, they've found out some stuff about his cocaine past, which is showing this mealy-mouthed, like, repentance thing, you know what I mean? And I just laughing my balls off, like, you know what I mean? How they were, you know, the one thing, I'm not a fan of Michael Gove, but I think any person, there is a certain hypocrisy to him having been hard on drugs in his tenure as a politician, you know, yet he's now been found out, you know. And so there's two ways to look at it. I don't want to crucify anybody that does that stuff, but the irony, you know, of him now, you know, being found out. So they've got to do something about this worldwide war on drugs. It didn't work in the Reagan era. It was disastrous, you know, the amount of people that died.
There's an amazing documentary about how that whole campaign was essentially a way to legalize slavery again.
Yeah.
It's like, if we can't make them slaves, let's criminalize them and then put, you know, however many millions of African American people into jail unlawfully.
There's a whole industry.
And then
know,
have them working,
the
building everything.
Yeah, there's a whole industry beyond the war on drugs. And the second thing to say about it, actually within the drug production sphere, is you have to get some kind of handle on it, because one of the reasons I've done cannabis once, it's never suited me. I've also done acid a couple of times, and that didn't suit me either. I had some crazy experiences with the Godflesh guys, actually. They're just fucking, which were turned out to not be very good in the end, because I had a bad trip, you know. But so never again for me, you know. I just don't, it just doesn't suit me. I'll stay away from it. I'm fine with that, you know.
Do you drink?
Let me continue on just what I was trying to get to. You have to do something, because what people, that one of the drugs of choice for people that wouldn't usually do drugs, as far as I know, is cocaine, you know. Now, cocaine is a big problem in the sense that it's not the actual effects or the basis of it that bother me in terms of its composition. It's
the
people that it's the people that suffer for it. There are people that live in certain zones in South America, usually on the borders between countries where there's a lot of drug traffic that go through, that are enslaved, you know, by drugs gangs, you know, cartels and stuff like that. And that's a human rights fucking travesty, you know what I mean? And that has to stop. you know, it has to stop. There's no glory. You can't glorify that. There is no glorification of that, you know.
And it's ironic as well, because cocaine is probably perceived to be the most socially acceptable drug amongst the elite.
I don't think people know. I think people do have an inkling, but they just kind of don't want to know.
Yeah.
You know, so I wouldn't touch it for that reason. I know people that do it, you know, and I think they should come to their own conclusions about it, but I will not touch it with a fucking barge pole for those very reasons, you know. I have absolutely no reason to be wanting to go anywhere near it, you know.
And, well, obviously, you know, I mean, whether it's cocaine or whether it's prescription pills, but there's been a real wave recently of a lot of high-profile musicians kind of taking themselves out and taking their own lives.
Yeah.
And you see the whether that's a combination of fame and drugs, and then whatever else was already in existence
as far as we can take the media reports as gospel, you know, I think there's been a couple of situations where it seems they died by accident, you know, because of cocktail, and that's fucking tragic, man. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, and you got, again, it comes down to, we go back to the fact that, you know, corporations are allowed carte blanche in this world sometimes, you know, they really are. They're allowed to do things that singular citizens would be in jail for many years, and they just get away with it scot-free. There's nobody to answer for it. So, you know, big pharma, as people like to call it, mate, surely somebody's got to answer for these prescription drug epidemics, you know. And the irony of it is that when the medication is most likely to help, arguably, like in Africa and places like that, that rather than making it as cheap as they do in Western countries, when they go to other continents, they'll ramp the prices up. So people that do need drugs over there can't get them. So people end up fucking dying sometimes, you know, because they can't get access to drugs or healthcare and stuff like that. It's fucking crazy, you know. The way the unregulated nature of companies, corporations like that, you know.
Do you believe that music still has the power to have a positive effect in the way that it can change the world?
I believe so, yeah. If I didn't, well, what's my point, you know, to, yeah, of course, we're a band at the end of the day, so I will say that, you know, we're not just people
just
on the
activists.
Yeah. By the way, am I away from the mic a little bit?
Yeah, come on in a little bit, mate. Yeah, it's all good.
I tend to do that, rock backwards and forwards.
If you just pop in that way there.
Yeah, sorry.
Do you want me to push the table a bit?
Yeah, it might help, yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, so we are a band. I do like the art of music, you know. I am into the art of stuff, you know, the unconventional, confrontational side of the art of music.
Well, I love what you guys do, because it's a very humanitarian message with a very aggressive delivery, and I love that juxtaposition.
Yeah, that's the irony of it, you know. Yeah. It's like an oxymoron kind of thing.
It's like,
know,
hippie music, but
yeah, exactly.
Super and abrasive,
I'm perfectly comfortable with that.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I think that's a plus point.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, you know, very much so. We're not speakers in speaker's corner on standing on soapboxes. We are a band, so we do have an artistic side to us. We do want to please people with the stuff that we do, you know, definitely. But at the same token, if we can spread ideas and stuff like that, if we use that as a platform, then why not? You know, it doesn't always stick. Sometimes you meet, you know, a fair degree of opposition, but that's not gonna dampen my enthusiasm for it. It's not going to piss on my pizza, so to speak.
You know,
we're just going to do it anyway. You know, I think if you believe in what you do, especially if you're pushing like a humanitarian ethos, you know, I think you have to, because you have to plow through things that need looking at, in my opinion, in this world, you know.
How would you like to be remembered? Do you ever think about legacy and that idea of, once I'm gone, how will I be mythologized or?
No, I don't care about being eulogized or mythologized, to be honest. I've never, you know what? I was just in the right place at the right time. I can do certain things. I can do certain things with my throat that a lot of people can't do. I don't know why. I mean, it's an anatomic thing, an anatomical thing, I don't know. But I just know I was in the right place at the right time. I had a great love for the music and the people that were around me at the time, still do. And and that's it, you know. If people, I hope people remember me when I go, you know, but not necessarily in the sense that, oh, he was a great cultural commentator. Yeah, I don't really, it's not about me, you know what I mean? It was never about me, you know. It's about the collective. It's about what Napalm does. It's about what Napalm puts out to the world, not me personally, which is why it's nice. We've won a couple of awards down the years, and it was nice. Don't get me wrong, I'm not being ungrateful about it, but it was nice that people gave us that accolade. But it's never about that for me. It was always about the collective, you know, and what we could do, what we could say, you know, how we could get ideas out there, what we could achieve artistically. That's what it was about for me, you know. I never wished to be singled out, you know, or have a profile, like, you know, it's that way. It's just it's not my thing, you know.
I think that's what people are drawn to with you, and what they love about you is that you are the antithesis of a rock star, and that's so refreshing.
Mate, I never liked it, you know. I never felt the need to conform to those. Again, back to stereotypes. I never felt the need to conform to a stereotype. Yeah, sure, you know, I had a Mohican in my earlier days, which are kind of classic references. I've had long hair, and I've had
the long blonde mullet.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that look.
I've had piercings. I've had, you know, all these different t-shirts, all different. But because I wanted to do it. It wasn't because I wanted to fit into somebody's stereotype. You know, and it's not either that... I've always disliked this thing that, oh, you know, in every band photo, you should stand there with your fist clenched down by your side and look like somebody's put a coat hanger up your back, you know. No, you know. I'd rather sit around on this settee, like now, laughing, you know, in a photo, show a bit of humour, you know, and put that as a band photo. I'm quite happy with that, you know. It's. I don't think you should be one thing, you know. The idea that you have to conform to being, oh, this is metal, or that's metal, or this is punk, or that's punk, or this is that, and that's that. Just do what you feel comfortable with.
Freedom of expression.
Yeah, and you
right,
know,
that's
and
what it's all about.
And if that doesn't fit to some like marketing person's perception of how a band like Napalm Dust should look, who gives a shit? You know what I mean? Really, you know, who cares? You know, I mean, we've come this far by being what we've wanted to be, and I would argue that we've actually achieve some bits and pieces, you know. So,
and on your own terms, like
on our own terms,
on your own terms,
on our own terms, you know. Don't get me wrong, there are times when we were kind of sucked into certain things, which I only speaking for myself, which at the time I felt uncomfortable with and I wish we hadn't have done, but we kind of learnt a lesson by them, you know. We learnt a lot, don't do that again. You know, I'm not doing that again, sort of thing. And so that's made us, I think, stronger, you know, as a musical force. You know, that's the right way to put it, you know.
Will you continue with Napalm until you can continue no more? Is it something you'd like to see yourself doing?
Well, mate, here's the thing.
Your senior years?
Well, here's the thing. One of the things that's always made me laugh, you know, sarcastically, is this whole thing about, you know, there is a certain, I'm sure you'd agree, there's this thing where bands reach a certain age, you know, the band itself and the members, you know, reach certain ages, and people go, oh, well, that's it now, you know, all the past best years are behind them. And the band almost conform to that sort of, you know, that sort
taking
of,
us out to pasture.
Oh, I'm slowing down and going down the hill now and all the rest of it. Fuck that shit, man. No.
Well,
no,
look at
what?
A band like Killing Joke or
yeah,
you guys.
Yeah.
Like, the music that's being put out is as
you know
good
what?
As anything.
I will. My intention is to go out there on stage and do exactly what I did in 1988, 89. And I would argue that I still do, you know. And I would argue that the music, whilst it has progressed, is still as potent, you know, as back in those times. I have no intention of doing anything that might sort of mellow things down a little bit, you know what I mean? No intention at all, because I think once we do that as a band, we're done. That's it. Game over. You know what I mean? So I would suggest, I have no interest, mate. On the level of stimulus, I have no interest in doing that. That sounds like the most boring fucking world thing in the world to me. You know, no interest. You know, after Napalm Death has been fucking brilliant. You know, it's almost like a phantom limb for me. If it was to go, and it might, everything comes to an end. I accept that. But if it did go, it would be like cutting one of my limbs off. You know, I've lived it, as have the other guys, you know, through the years. And I think the confrontational, unconventional manner of Napalm Death is the foundation of it, you know. That's why I don't know if I could join another band after Napalm Death, because it couldn't feel as pioneering as what it was from those Scum days onwards, you know what I mean? I mean, could you really step into something after that and go, well, this is another band and it's good and all that, but so I'll just roll with it for a bit? No, you want to be fucking stepping into it, go, fucking come on, like, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's it, you know.
Mate, this has been amazing. Thanks so much. I want to ask you a couple more questions, then
yeah,
we'll wrap
sure,
it up.
Yeah, sure, mate, we're good. I'm good to go.
If you had to single out a couple of things that you've achieved with the band that you're especially proud of, could you?
Well, I mean, I think for what it's worth, you know, we were one of the first bands to go down to South Africa, you know. Now, I was uncomfortable about it at the time because it wasn't that long after the apartheid era had finished, and I didn't want to be doing anything that was like associated with those days, you know. But the ANC got involved, you know, with the promoter. And so they kind of gave us a few pointers of where and where not to go through him, you know. And so I was really quite chuffed to do that. You know, we were really trying our best to bring everybody together. Unfortunately, in a lot of places it just did seem to be kind of middle class, like white kids. And I'm not saying that to be disrespectful to anybody, you know, but that's literally what it was at points.
You were hoping,
you know,
to reach more of the people that would have benefited.
I was hoping to reach out more to the actual gigs. Now, I went out there and did some community stuff before that, and it was like everything was mixed. It was great, you know, it was a couple of things. And but the gigs were, not all of them, but a couple of them were kind of like that, you know, so we didn't quite bridge the gap, but at least we'd given it a go, you know what I mean? So that's definitely one thing. What would another thing be? I just think the fact that what makes it quite, but I guess it's following on from a lot of stuff that we've done, you know. We are now, Napalm's now asked, we are able and we are asked to play on festivals and gigs that are not the standard metal or punk gigs, you know what I mean? They are a big cross section of different things, and that makes me quite proud, you know, because I think
you haven't pigeonholed yourself.
No, I mean there are when you like on the metal press side of things, you do get that kind of the default position as a metal band.
Yeah,
and I, you know what, I try not to give a fuck about stuff like that because it's not worth giving a fuck. And again, I don't mean that in a detrimental way to the person. I don't mean, oh, fuck you, you know, not like that at all. But I think it's a go-to expression and a go-to assumption, you know, and I just don't think it's, definitely metal's in there. It's definitely a strand of Napalm Death, you know, undoubtedly. But there are so many things besides. And as the years go on, the albums go on, you can hear it, you know what I mean? You can hear the Killing Joke, Public Image, Throbbing Gristle, you know, Einstürz, Ender, Neubarten, or I could go on list of stuff, you know, the Scandinavian hardcore, Japanese hardcore, you know,
progressive
whatever.
Music basically.
Yeah.
And I don't mean prog, but
yeah, no,
music,
yeah,
that pushes
sure,
boundaries
sure.
And
post hardcore stuff, noise rock, all that stuff's in Napalm Death, you know, for sure, you know. And so when it just it's Napalm Death metal band, you know, it's like, oh, come on, really, you know what I mean? You know? And I shouldn't do that, because I know it's the metal press, and I know they need to characterize things in a certain way to get across to the readership, you know. But you just sometimes you just go, oh god, you know. So, but you know, I, again, I'm not making a huge deal out of it. It's just sometimes is a bit.
It's one string to many.
Yeah, it's one string to many, many, many things. You know, one strand of the band. You know.
Fuck yeah, Ed Miliband.
Yeah.
How was he?
Nice bloke.
He was all right, was he?
Yeah, he was nice bloke. Yeah,
one of the good ones.
He was nice, very nice. You know, and
that clip was hilarious.
Yeah,
it just went so viral.
Well, here's the thing: before we did it, they'd actually said to me before, and they said, "Look, we want you to do your voice on air." I was like, "Oh, come on, mate! Do you know how many times I've been asked to do that? It's getting a bit old now." You know what I mean?
Monkey.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, come on, for the right. I was like, "Oh, all right, then I'll do it." You know, one more time. But then, of course, it turned into this unintentional. It is fun, even though I say it myself. When you, it is really funny, because you know Ed Miliband is a fan of the band. You know how he went on Twitter saying, "I'm a fan of Napalm Death," and like people tweeted him back. I think going, "Oh bollocks, come off it!" Like he told me stuff like before that only a person that knew the band would know. You know,
so he was a legit fan.
I was like, eh, you know, and of course. Of course, the funny thing about that is, as a trade union person, I got to vote on the Labour Party leadership. And I said, Ed, you know, I said, I can't quite remember, but I think you might have been first on my voting form. You know? And he was just like laughing, you know, a little bit. But yeah, so, but take the politics out of it, you know, he was a nice person. You know, he was, there was a, and so then when you meet people, I mean, yeah, people could turn around to me now and say, oh, you know, well, what are you saying that for? Because there's establishment and all the rest of it, and the person and all the rest of it. But you know what? I think that's half the problem. Take the structure and the establishment out of it, you know. Even as a person that has been involved with the Labour movement and points down the years, take that out of it for a second. Just look at the person. That's where we're going wrong half the time. Look at the person. He was nice to me, you know, and I was nice to him, and I enjoyed it. It was nice, albeit briefly, you know. So, Richard Bergen is another guy, the Labour MP. You might know he's a Leeds Labour MP. He's big into his, like, music and stuff, you know. And me and him did the conference thing down here, like it was a music stroke, human rights kind of affair. And also, brilliant, super nice person, you know, really good company, you know, so...
People are people,
they
right?
They are, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what we got to start treating each other as.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what it tends to be is people sometimes mistake the people for the structures in society. You know, it's like I wish there to not really be a monarchy anymore. You know, I'm not a fan of the monarchic system. It doesn't mean I want to hurt the people that are in it. You know what I mean? And sometimes people just assume that you want to go and, you know, sort of. Do something dastardly to, you know, people in the higher echelons. Well, I don't. You know, people are people. You know what? If there's,
let's just change the system and take care of those that need our help.
And then bring everybody in. Yeah. You know, from the bottom upwards. You know, that to me is
right.
The fuck. You know, we're really getting attacked.
It's coming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think on that note we'll wrap it. Otherwise, we're going to get fucking drenched.
We are getting pissed on. Already.
Barney, shake my hand, mate. Thanks so much, mate. Man.
Yeah,
come
cheers,
back on again sometime.
Time.
What you got going on for the rest of the year?
We have two back to back tours in Europe. A Russian Eastern European tour, and the tour is Sick of It All at the end of the year. So yeah, it's all go towards the end of the year. Bollocks of things.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Nice one, mate.
No,
I really enjoyed that.
Cheers, Muck. All right, then, yeah.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.